So this morning, we're taking a traditional Advent theme. We're looking at the theme of hope. And I've got two readings for you, one from the Old Testament and one from the New Testament. So the Old Testament is Jeremiah 33, 14 to 16. The days are coming, declares the Lord, when I will fulfill the gracious promise I made to the house of Israel and to the house of Judah. In those days and at that time, I will make a righteous branch sprout from David's line. He will do what is just and right in the land. In those days, Judah will be saved and Jerusalem will live in safety. This is the name by which he will be called, the Lord, our righteousness. And then in Romans 8, verse 22, we know that the whole creation has been groaning as in the pains of childbirth, right up to the present time. Not only so, but we ourselves who have the first fruits of the Spirit groan inwardly as we wait eagerly for our adoption as sons, the redemption of our bodies. For in this hope we were saved. But hope that is seen is no hope at all. Who hopes for what he already has? But if we hope for what we do not yet have, we wait for it patiently. So the obvious question is, what are we hoping for? What are we hoping for at this time of the year? What are we hoping for in our life? And in the world's eyes, this word hope stresses two things. It stresses something that is going to happen in the future, something we don't already have. And it stresses an idea of invisibility, something that we cannot see. So in a worldly sense, that's what hope is. And I think that at this time of the year, we are sold a Christmas conspiracy of hope. We're sold a conspiracy that Christmas Day is going to look something like this. We'll have the most enormous table ever seen in the world, somehow fitting in our kitchen, which up to this point only kind of copes with an IKEA for Mike, a four-person table. But it's a great table, groaning with food, the perfect golden Christmas turkey, all of the trimmings, everything you can imagine for. And gathered around this table, all of the aunties and the uncles and people that most children have never heard of, but they see once a year, they're wheeled out on Christmas Day, and they're all happy, and they're wearing bits of paper on their head, and they're telling awful jokes about elves and reindeers and Santas, and the worst puns you would ever see, jokes you would never hear at any other time of the year. And there's a log fire that is roaring in the background, and in the afternoon, you play games. Who plays charades in the middle of June? Nobody. Who plays Pictionary when they're on summer holiday? Nobody. But on Christmas Day, that's what we do. And we love it. We love it to bits. We wouldn't have it any other way. So maybe that's the type of Christmas, the conspiracy Christmas, that you're hoping for. It would be fantastic if it was absolutely like that. And in the afternoon, maybe Granddad's snoring away by the fire because he's had too much to eat and wouldn't understand charades anyway. So maybe that is what you are hoping for. Or maybe your life isn't quite like that. Maybe you're hoping that somehow this Christmas you're going to get through it in one piece with no major arguments, nobody falling out with each other, just coming through it in one piece. Maybe you don't know what it is to have that greater family. Maybe you're on your own. Maybe you don't even have your children with you on Christmas Day this year. So Christmas can be a time of hurt. It can be a time of pain because somehow it focuses what's happening in the rest of our lives all on that one moment. And Christmas can be, on the one hand, one of the most joyful times in the year, but on the other hand, it could be one of the most lonely and most painful times in the year. I put, every so often in the youth block, I put up a little question on the blackboard. And just to get the young people from SNG, but basement and attic, thinking about things. And I wrote something like, what is the best, or what Christmas present, or what's the best thing about Christmas for you this year? And I don't know who wrote it, but I know it's after one of the clubs. And this person, sorry, wrote on this board, Christmas without my father. That's what that person was hoping for. How sad is that? Not everybody falls for this conspiracy of Christmas. So for many, hope is just wishful thinking. It's a kind of unsure optimism, something we would love to happen. We have no certainty of fulfillment. But this is far from the nature of hope in the Bible. Instead of being wishful thinking, this word hope in the Bible means we can have a strong and a confident expectation. A strong and a confident expectation. When that word hope is used in the Bible, this is a word that we can pin our life upon. Biblically, hope is synonymous, sits alongside the idea of salvation. The blessings that brings, past, present, and future. And hope, we remember at this time of the year, rests in one small baby, born in Bethlehem many years ago. A baby that grew up into a young man who gave his life for us, who rose from the dead and ascended into heaven. It's this baby, it's this child, this Son of God, that gives us the strong and confident expectation that the promises of God are something that we will enjoy and we can have in our life. And in this young man, through his Holy Spirit, that we are sealed and shown that we belong to the family of God, whatever our earthly family is like. It's very easy for us as human beings to put our hope in many things. Maybe we think if we had more money, life would be easier. If we had a bigger house, we could fit that big table in at Christmas time. If we had a more up-to-date and a faster car, everything would be wonderful. Maybe if we changed our boyfriend or girlfriend, maybe we would have a better or a stronger relationship. And we can spend our life focusing on the if-onlys. If only this happened, if only I had this, if only this person was like this. And that is kind of living life by our if-onlys, is feeding on some discontent within us, some disease within us. But for God, it's clear that our hope doesn't rest in these things. Psalm 33 says this, "Blessed is the nation whose God is the Lord, the people he chose for his inheritance. From heaven the Lord looks down and sees all of mankind. From his dwelling place he watches all who live on earth. He who forms the hearts of all, who considers everything they do. No king is saved by the size of his army. No warrior escapes by his great strength. A horse is a vain hope for deliverance. Despite all of its strength, it cannot save. But the eyes of the Lord are on those who fear him and on those who hope in his unfailing love." This psalm, to me, compares a kind of natural, worldly hope with a hope that we have from a supernatural God. Human nature says this, help. We're surrounded by our enemies. Life is getting tough. We're just about to be overwhelmed. What will we do? Well, we'll make ourselves bigger than our enemies. We'll have more people in our army. We'll equip them with better tools. We'll have a strong leader. We'll have horses that can unroute their horses. We will be bigger than them. We will be better than them. And that's what we're going to place our hope in, being bigger, faster, and stronger. But this psalm says, God says, that's a false hope. We cannot place our hope in being bigger, in being stronger, and being faster under a strong leader. That is not going to do us any good. That's not going to save the people of God. Hope does not rest in human beings, but in God and God alone. Blessings come from him and not from men. Hope does not come from power, position, or profit. True hope rests in God and his Son Jesus. I just wonder if we had the time to rewrite Psalm 33. I wonder what our version of bigger, faster and stronger would look like if we update it. We probably wouldn't talk about horses. We might talk about armies, but we might talk about the wealth that we have, the friends that we have, the influence that we think that we have. I wonder what bigger, stronger, faster would look like. But true hope rests in God. In Romans 15, it says this, "May the God of hope fill you with all joy and peace as you trust in him, so that you may overflow with hope by the power of his Holy Spirit." You see, God is called the God of hope. This means that he is the source for all real hopes. If we're to have any hope at all, it must come from him, because only God has the power to give it. The God of all hope promises to fill us with overflowing with that hope. Psalm 62 says this, "Find rest, my soul, in God alone. My hope comes from him. He alone is my rock and my salvation. He is my fortress. I will never be shaken. So we can talk about hope, but what does this hope look like? What does God say that this hope looks like? Because hope, you see, can be something that we say we carry around in our minds every day. Something that maybe we believe in our minds and maybe believe in our hearts. But the hope that God talks about isn't a kind of passive hope that we just carry about and think about every so often. Maybe when we're singing one of our favourite worship songs. It is an active hope. So in Romans, we read that hope brings joy and peace. Again, in Psalm 33, we read that hope protects us, surrounds us and protects us. In Psalm 31, it says that this hope gives us strength and it gives us courage and it makes us bold enough to go and share this hope with other people. In 1 Thessalonians, it says that it hopes, gives us endurance, comfort and confidence. In Matthew, we read that it changes what we value in life. And in Titus, it says it affects what we do with our lives, our talents, our time, and our treasures. You see, this hope is an active hope. This hope is something that lives within us, changes not only the way that we think, but our confidence we have, the protection we feel as surrounded by God, the boldness we have in sharing God with others and living the life that he wants us to live. This is a life-changing hope. Not just some wish in our mind. This is something that changes who we are and what we do, because who we are rests in the person and the identity of that baby, and what we do rests in the strength that comes from his Holy Spirit. It is a life-changing hope. Sounds good, doesn't it? Maybe it sounds too good to be true. How do we know that our hope is certain? How do we know that we have confidence in his hope? How do we know that this is just not a Christian version of wishful thinking? But our confidence comes in the nature of God and who he is. You see, our God is a promise keeper. He makes promises and he stands by those promises. And the evidence is there for us all to see. We think of Moses when he was called by God through the burning bush. I mean, I'd love God to appear to me in a burning bush. Once I got used to the idea, it'd be a bit scary to start off with. But he called Moses and he said, Moses, I've got a job for you to do. I want you to go to Pharaoh and tell him to let my people go. And Moses kind of tried to reverse engineer this calling by saying, I'm absolutely hopeless. You don't want me. I'm a pile of rubbish. I can't string my words together to make a sentence. So how can I even tell Pharaoh what to do? Go and send somebody else. And God just wouldn't let Moses go. He said, if you do what I'm asking you to do, you will know my comfort, you will know my protection, you will know my boldness, you will know my strength, and you can do this. In one word, God gave Moses hope, and it kind of worked out all right for him, didn't it? God promised a new land, a land flowing with milk and honey for his people. And after 40 years of wandering around in the wilderness, after their great high of crossing the Red Sea, most of God's people had given up hope. When is this going to come? You promised this, but now we can't see it. Surely this is just an empty hope. But then Joshua led the people into the new land. God kept his promises. Think of Noah, building his ark at a time when he was ridiculed by everybody else because there was no sign of rain anywhere to be seen. Most people would have looked upon him and thought, Noah, you are completely bonkers. You know, what on earth are you doing? But Noah knew in his heart, and God kept him safe and kept his family safe. And there are loads and loads of examples, but I guess the ultimate one has to be Jesus, the baby born in Bethlehem, fulfilling all the promises were made throughout the Old Testament. I love following Jesus from Genesis to Revelation. I love following that thread. And I love stitching together all the prophecies made about him in the Old Testament and saying, yep, I can see that came true here. I can see that came true there. The child who was born for us so that we could restore our relationship with God. A child who later defeated death through his resurrection, promising us the gift of life. And we can go on and on and on. God is a God of promises, but he is a promise keeper. Final quote from me. I think it's like this. Sorry, that's probably got delusions of grandeur in there somewhere. But I think it's this. It's not so much what we hope for that counts. It's who we hope in. I'm going to invite the team back up. I'm going to show a video, if it all works, in a minute, a reflection on Advent hope. After that, the team are going to lead us in a time of drawing closer to God in worship, the God of hope. And during that time, just encourage each one of us to open our hearts and our minds and our spirit to the work of God's Holy Spirit. Maybe you need to know this morning what it's like to have a promise from God kept. Maybe for you, you're dreading what's going to happen in a few days' time on Christmas. Maybe your Christmas doesn't fit with a great Christmas conspiracy. But I believe this morning in this active God, not just active in hope, but active amongst us when we meet. So let's watch a reflection, then stand as Chris and the team lead us. And just be aware to what the Holy Spirit wants to do in your life this morning.